Chapter 8, and after devotion, and this chapter is entitled Passes to be Avoided, and this describes the there's 29, oh, there's more, 32, and then there's another list of another 32, 64. And then there's another, then the 10 offenses to the Holy Name, which we recite every day. So the homework assignment was to read the chapter and write down any questions that you may have regarding any one of the lists. So what we can do is we can go through them one at a time, and I won't give an elaboration on each one of them. We'll just list them. If there's some reason to say something, I will. If there's not, we'll go on. If there's a question that you have that you have written down related to one of them, then we can discuss it when we come to that one. Okay? So we'll just go and we can begin the reading. All right, who would like to read? And we'll just take turns reading.
In the supplementary Vedic literature, there is the following list of 32 offenses in the matter of serving the Lord. Number one, one should not enter the temple or the deity in a car or palanquin or with shoes on the feet. Two, one should not.
Okay. That one precision. It's usually. Refers to any one should not enter the temple of the deity in a car or a palanquin. And India people that carried it on their palanquin. Sometimes a person would carry it on a palanquin, but that's considered. Or with shoes on. Shoes, we take off our shoes. Why do we take off our shoes? Because it's a holy place. And to enter into a holy place with shoes is considered to be against the principles. Just like in Vrindavan, when you're going to go on fire crown, you don't even wear shoes. Because all the land of Vrindavan is Chintamani, that shoes are considered to be. Some places, they see you with shoes, they make you take them off. It depends on the place. But generally, shoes are considered to be unclean and not proper for all the offenses. Of course, we see other traditions, they don't do that. They take their hat off. Some people, they remove their headgear when they come into the temple. They always keep their hats on and take their shoes off. So, respect for the holy place. Okay?
Number two, one should not fail to observe the various festivals for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Janmashtami or Rath Yatra.
Okay. Holiness Giriraj Swami is presently writing a book, How to Observe the Festivals. Mm-hmm. I just talked to him. So he's putting that together so we can learn the more details on how properly to observe festivals according to scriptures and according to, mostly according to Prabhupada's instructions. There's a way to honor the festivals in a proper way. Okay?
Yeah. Number three, one should not avoid bowing down before the deity.
Okay, and unless there's a question, continue.
I have a question on that one, actually. For example, the morning program is pretty established, what we do, but if we were to leave here and go up to Bhagavatam class, or Bhagavad Gita class, do we bow down in front of the deities again we did it in the morning, or every time we go in the temple room, do we do it?
Oh, each time you walk in the temple room, you have to bow down. And each time you leave the temple room, you have to bow down.
To all three sets of deities?
You always pay at least two obeisances. You pay obeisances to the spiritual master, you pay obeisances to the deities. Now, some temples, they have three altars, and you pay obeisances to three deities. Some places, you know, where they just have like one altar, but there's three deities on one altar, paying obeisances to one. That's a little unclear in terms of my, like when I go in the morning and I'm late, I only pay my obeisances once. The temples are the curtains are already open and the kirtan's going on, I pay my obeisances once. It's not like it's you have to pay three times, but you should pay your obeisances to the deities just once. Like that. My understanding is Guru, Vaishnavas, and Deities. You have to pay your basis off to the Vaishnavas. Okay. But you don't pay the basis to the Vaishnavas when the curtains are open. In some places, this is where we were taught. Every time a devotee comes in the room, in the temple room, you pay your obeisances. I remember during the japa period, we would pay our obeisances about 50 times. And then we would walk in and pay our obeisances, and then we would walk in and pay our obeisances. To each devotee as they were walking into the temple. But you can do that in your mind. It's not practical. So generally, I just pay my obeisances to Prabhupada, of course, to Tulsi if the curtains are closed, and to the deities as a group. You can do all three altars, it's nice. And I think that's the way people do it. But obeisances must be there. And our basis is you'll see it, and I'll mention it there. Okay, we'll do more on our basis in here, but generally that's it. Okay.
Number four. One should not enter the temple to worship the Lord without having washed one's hands and one's feet after eating.
And in India, people generally walk in the temple, even if barefooted. And you're barefooted outside too. So there's a place in some temples where you wash your feet. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Hands and feet. And rinse your feet off too. And when you're walking outside, when you walk into the temple. And generally, it's also mentioned that after eating, you should wash your feet too. Because you're usually sitting down and you're eating on the floor, right? And you're barefooted and you're walking on the floor there. So you clean your hands and your feet. Cleanliness thing is a common thing. If you were to step into shadow while you were eating, then you would have to wash your feet. Okay.
Number five, one should not enter the temple in a contaminated state. According to Vedic scripture, if someone dies in the family, the whole family becomes contaminated for some time according to its status. For example, if the family is a Brahmin, their contamination period is 12 days. For the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, it is 15 days. And for the Sudras, 30 days.
Some places they still do this. This is mentioned here as an offense. What's your understanding on this, Mohan? In the culture?
That's not bad for Vaishnava. Because when a Vaishnava dies, they bring the body of the Vaishnava to the deity sometimes. Especially when it's a spiritual mountain.
What's your idea?
Yeah, the discussion is there in India. When someone dies in someone's family, whoever goes to the family, they take bath after they come.
The family is continued in considered contaminated.
Yeah, contaminated. And no one, the whole family for 30 days or 12 days. Mostly it is 12 days.
Mm-hmm. It takes 12 days.
Mostly it is 12 days. No one, like even if he goes, talks to them, or he goes to their house, and then once they come back, they wash their clothes and wash their clothes to take bath. But in general, no one thinks that we are contaminated, so deity sin is already there. But they don't worship some people for, they don't observe any functions for 1 year. There's no family functions for all 1 year.
But I think this is all karma kanda. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the sense that it doesn't apply to Vaishnavas. Vedanta says Vaishnavas, Sudras, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. Who are Vaishnavas?
What is it? For Vaishnavas, it is, you should not do any personal service to the deities for 3 days.
3 days.
3 days. No cooking for the Lord. No making garlands or going on altar to Arati.
That's what they do in Chapa.
Yeah, for 3 days.
3 days.
You can chant, you can take darshan.
Can't go on the altar, somebody in your family died.
Yeah.
This is generally refers to certain. This is more of a karma kind of. In the sense that it refers to Brahma Shakyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. We don't fall into those categories. We fall into categories. But the people in India who fall into one of these categories will observe. They won't come to the temple for that. The whole family is considered contaminated. They can't eat. Death is not so nice. Anyway, I don't think you have to worry about that situation. I mean, that's not a big consideration. Just keep coming and chanting Hare Krishna. What if I'm
poor?
Okay, next one.
Number 6. One should not bow down on one hand.
Okay. So show how you, when you have your big bag in your hand, what do? Just give them the demonstration. We just did it right now. Here he goes. Can't bow down on one hand. People who bow down on one hand, it's considered offensive. See it all the time.
Is there any reason?
Yeah. Obeisances are considered, so many parts of the body must touch the ground. There's 11 point obeisances, which is called the dandavas. There's 11 major points of the body. I forgot what it is. The feet, the knees, the elbows.
Ashtanga pranam.
Ashtanga pranam. And what is that?
Panchanga.
Five parts are the hands, the stomach, and the legs. So, that's Panchanga and Ashtanga. Ashtanga is 11. And Panchanga is 5. So we do when you do a full obeisance, that's 11 parts. They're called dandavas. And we do 5 parts. It's just the etiquette on how to pay obeisances. Paying obeisances is like an asana. It's a type of an asana, like a yoga asana. and it's meant to show submission. So it's not just like, well, I got to get down because I'm not supposed to be up. You see all kinds of people don't touch their head to the floor. That's another one.
The other book
is the ones they touch. This is wrong too, right? With the hands on the floor, you touch your head to your head.
Yeah, this should touch.
Yeah, that should touch the floor.
I see some devotees, they don't go down. Mm-hmm. They touch the floor with their hands, and they put their hand on his head.
And that's an emergency. The other day, what was his name? Did that to me. And it was a Shupanishad, because his back is real bad and he can't get down. So he did that, he just touched the floor with his head. So that's like the same thing, but it's only under certain conditions. Paying obeisance is one of the four, there's four things. Krishna says in Gita, Manmana Bhagavad Bhakto Mamiji Mamivaisasi Satya Mamivaisasi. So, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage to me. Offer your homages, prayers. Namaskar. Pay obeisance. Paying obeisance is a very high principle in devotional service. It indicates submission, it indicates service, like that.
Srila Bhagavad Gita, he had a strict regulation to chant a particular number of rounds and pay this number of obeisances.
Yeah, he paid 1,000 obeisances to the Vaishnavas, 2,000 obeisances to the Lord.
Every day.
It says that his austerities were like lines in the rock. You try to erase a line in the rock, you can't. He was so fixed in his austerity.
The Prabhupada Chupati, Vaishnava etiquette, it has even figures how to pay obeisances, how to not pay. Do you have this book?
Yeah. He just showed. He sure showed how to pay when you have something.
It has all different long kinds.
Yeah, and pay one hand and whatever the other one. The head not touching the floor.
Arms like this.
The head on the side. The forehead should touch.
Sometimes you can't breathe, you know, especially like when you're after a heavy kirtan. And you go down like this, you like suffocating. You know, find that so sometimes.
You don't have to take dandavats. Dandavats are usually meant for the guru, right? And the Lord.
Yeah.
If you're paying obeisance, he's just coming in, offended to a devotee, you can just do panchanga, 5 times. Yeah. And then there's two things. Here, I'll demonstrate. If you're standing up and you're watching people paying obeisance, you'll see this, and this is really funny.
The butt sticking way up in the air like this. And that's supposed to do like this. That's wrong. This is the way to do it. Right?
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
Right, like this. It's like a bunch of horses. Looks fun. I see people like that. I just kind of look the other way. But that's you see. You see what I'm not saying. Like this. The Matadis don't pay us the, you know, us number. They only do 5 like that. And they're not supposed to pay expenses generally in front of Balachais or something. They're supposed to pay it on the side.
I don't want them to be done, but
it's obvious, come on.
Perfect answer.
Next one. Because they're old and they can't do it.
Number seven, one should not circumambulate in front of Shiva.
Circumambulate
in front of Shiva.
Did we break that one? We do that when we do a circumambulate in front of the deities like that in Kirtan? Yeah, we do that all the time. But is that wrong?
But circumambulate in front of Krishna or just
in front of Krishna?
In front of Krishna. What does he say?
Circumambulating some person or?
You gotta read this version of it, read the rest of it.
The process of circumambulating the simple ceremony should begin circumambulating the deity's right hand side of the simple and common ground. So circumambulation should be performed outside the temple structure every 3 times a week.
Most temples have that. So you circumambulate the deity around the deity, not in front of the deity. Right? Mm-hmm. So in our kirtan, I always thought that, I was told that was wrong, but we do it so much in our temples that when we have the kirtan, everybody's going around in front of the deity like that. Because even when you're dancing, you're not supposed to show your back to the deity, and it's hard to avoid. But even like we do that, we turn our back, we go down and we come back up. That's wrong.
That's wrong?
Generally, we shouldn't do that. If you're not supposed to dance, put your back to the deer.
So
we do it all the time, though.
So we shouldn't do it?
Generally not.
I can't remember, but I just went 2 or 3 years ago when I was in Europe with Yashvara, and he spoke, before the kirtan, he gave about 15-minute, 20-minute speech about that, about having the back to the deities and everything, and he was saying how, I don't remember the details of it. I was just new to everything, like, wow, what's going on? But I remember him saying, because of the kirtan and the circumstances, that this is different because you're dancing with the Lord. It's not like, just give me some.
So it's all right in kirtan.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. That was the main point he was making. For kirtan, it's different.
Unless you prolong it, really prolong it.
Yeah,
if you're just dancing and you have your back, it's easy. If you're just like moving from one way to another, it seems to go right. That's a good dance. Yeah. I try to avoid it. Just like another thing is when we do Guru Puja, we should stand somewhat sideways, not straight back and facing, our backs are completely facing the deity. So there's a slight angle where the back is a little bit off to the side, and that's considered. The Prabhupada taught us, when you see the films in the old days, Prabhupada taught us that the men and the women face each other. And then when they dance, they look at the Lord and look at the church.
Maybe they have the chance
because
of maybe it changed over the years. So, they maybe feel strained in the neck. Like just looking straight ahead.
Yeah. If you look straight ahead, you see the ladies. You see some of the old films. The ladies are like that. But generally, just try to avoid as much as possible back to the deities, especially if you sit. I think that's also mentioned. Okay, someone else want to read?
One should not bend his legs before the deity.
That's like sitting like with your legs out.
Wouldn't the people know what
to do? Yeah, guests don't know. You see one guy who's laying on his back, probably with his feet pushed. Or even if you have your feet pointed towards a devotee, it's considered offensive. Mm-hmm. And actually not point your feet towards another devotee, that's also right. So that's,
is there any reason also for that?
Common etiquette. The bottom of the feet is considered the lowest part of the body. The bottom of the feet. So if you're facing the bottom of your feet towards someone,
because I heard that when you are asleep, when you put your feet against a devotee, mm-hmm. when you are sleeping, mm-hmm. that also it is good.
Put your feet.
If you are sleeping,
yeah.
and when the devotee is pointing your feet to
feet
you,
is, yeah.
that it isn't good.
Yes, I do. I always get disturbed when I see people point their feet to me. I don't say anything, but I know it's not right. And at any time, you gotta move. At no time should someone's feet be. But if you take shelter of somebody else's feet, that's good.
Oh, I'm taking shelter of feet at the moment.
So for a sitting in an ashram, though, like, for all practicality, your feet are gonna be pointed to something.
I never point my feet towards pictures. And that's one thing. You always have a section of the wall where there's no pictures like that.
I know. Swami Vasprabhu in LA, he doesn't have a Balabrahma tries to put any pictures of deities in the ashram. Of course, some of them do anyway, but generally speaking, he does not allow because you're changing in the ashram, feet, air.
You should not expose yourself. Even in my room, although my room is so decorated, I always keep myself covered all the time. Yeah, that's, I always keep a gum shot on, I like that. Passing out, what are you going to do?
I was thinking, Baba said we already have, he would tell the Brahmacharis that Ravastana Prabhu was coming. He would tell the Brahmacharis that we already have deities in the temple room. So, there's going to be for you to have so many pictures, everything, all the time changing, passing here, pointing your feet, like that. That's how I think it's
supposed to be. I think that's not wrong, but I think if we have pictures, it's okay. There should be one wall that you don't, I always do that when I do my exercise. I point my feet towards one wall, I point my I sleep, I turn and put my feet towards it, and I never change like that. But you have to be always conscious of that, constantly. But, to not to have it probably is the easiest way to deal with it. Okay.
One should not change it what to do. Do you hold in the ankles? Elbows or the midwife's hand.
You can demonstrate that.
Show
how to do it. How to do it. Yeah, that's it. Like that or down, like that. Yeah. Like that.
The elbows?
Like this.
Yeah.
Like elbows
too. Well, what if you sit like this? Like this. That'd be really uncomfortable, but let's say you were like in the back of the temple room, and someone's sitting like this.
The Lord, you should not do that. I mean, guests or congregational people don't. You should always keep your feet covered. Wearing pants in the temple is not good because you can't cover your feet. Mm-hmm. Your feet should always be covered.
Maharaj, I would have one leg in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Like that?
Sitting like this, and then another leg.
Not good.
Not good?
You can't do it holding your legs.
I mean, because you said that two legs.
One leg.
I see many erotic. I mean, Prabhupada had a certain pose too. So one of Prabhupada's ways of sitting is like this. But he wasn't whole. And sometimes he would have a rope like this. That's okay. That's when he was preaching. But generally before the beatings, everything was done so nicely. That's the idea. You gotta get before the beatings. Anything in the temple is one thing, but in the before the beatings is different. I mean, if the beatings are closed, generally these things don't apply. Right? And the curtains are closed.
No, we can keep reading because I had a question about
another one.
One should not lie down before the deity of Krishna.
Can't lie down on the floor before the deity. You can take your basis, you should just not lie down and sleep. Some people just lay down on the floor and go to sleep. You know, you want to do. Okay.
One should not accept prasad before the deity.
How do we deal with that one? They have that little thing in the back where you take the shower. Some temples, you also they also have feasts and they have the curtains open, right?
Also in Mumbai,
huh?
Well, they have special festivals.
Yeah, special festivals, yeah. Says the Lord likes to see the devotees take the shower. But I even my in my room, I close my duties every time I take the shower.
I know in LA they give the prasad outside the temple.
Yeah, in front of the temple. From the meeting. The puja is given from the altar.
Oh, so that's the altar, really.
Yeah, from the altar.
Supposed to eat.
When it's after Guru Puja. And now the devotees come and they put a lot of feet of Krishna on your head and give some prasad. And everybody eats in front of the meeting.
I don't know that's why. I've seen. I know you don't eat before the deities, but if you somebody gives you a, I don't know, maha from the deities plate or something, it seems like you're supposed to honor it. There's like two injunctions. As soon as maha is presented to you, you can't say no. You have to take something. That's another injunction. If someone gives you maha prasada, you have to take at least a morsel, no matter where it is. And then we have the other one you can eat before the deity. So generally it's not eating, it's not accepting a little maha that's not. Now this one needs to be discussed and kind of with people who know deity worship more intricate, but I'm not sure of this one.
One should not speak a lie before the deity.
Okay, any questions on that one?
Can you speak a lie when the
deity? Before the deity.
The curtain is closed?
Can't speak lies at all.
One should not talk very loudly before the deity.
Yes, you don't call across the temple room.
One should not talk with others. Before the deity.
So just generally talking before the others, before the deity is considered wrong.
Regularly.
It's all the time.
Yeah, when you are preaching and showing the deities to somebody,
that's Krishna. Just preaching. This is just talk.
What about after class?
When somebody comes up and you're discussing, it seems to be all right. I mean, that seems not as fun as somebody has to start talking to people. But that's also preaching. And now the idea is just get, if you have some discussion about some subject, better to take it outside. Sometimes people come up and start talking mundane things to me. As soon as I get the mundane subjects, and then I just say, well, let's kind of just go over here and talk. Or I try to cut it off. Generally, you don't talk mundane stuff, or just ordinary talk before the deity. If you're preaching, you're talking about Krishna consciousness, it has to apply. be speaking about other people before they can use that. I think that's also mentioned. Okay.
You should not cry or howl before the deity.
People cry and howl.
In my perspective of Mundra, it seems so beautiful holding.
Even the ladies?
And the ladies
do the
ululu?
Ululu.
What is this, ladies?
They howl.
It's a purpose.
Yeah, it's a custom in the
world. They blow the conch shell, they all howl.
They all howl.
That's not wrong.
What's your question? Cry or howl before the deity.
But that ululing is not. Ladies who do that.
They do that.
Only the men don't do that, only the ladies. But that's considered to be a cultural thing. That's not a game.
I don't know. I'm asking.
I thought that was really kind of a way of honor the woman, isn't it?
No, that doesn't apply.
Crying, in other words, crying is crying and howling is, these are things that are in distress.
Crying in ecstasy?
Please help me. I'm suffering.
Crying in ecstasy?
Well, though.
How are you going to judge that?
Well, there's two things here. Prabhupada explained that one should not cry before the deity, but if one cannot restrain it, then that's something else. But one should try to restrain any emotions before the deity.
Yeah,
because it looks cheap.
Like if you are just like a stone in front of the deity, how can you pray? Praying is that it should be emotional.
Emotions, but you have to keep your emotions inside.
Yeah, so emotions can be there, but not you don't exhibit them.
Right. I mean, there's always a little symptom externally, but once you make another, display, I think.
Oh, I would say,
that is
going to be so cheap.
You go to India, you see.
We're trying to provoke this India.
That is one temple, Dameshwar temple in India, in Mayapur, in Kolaji. And when we do kirtan, these people come and they just roll on the ground in front of us and knock us over in the kirtan. They're just rolling on the ground.
Mayapur, baby. Mayapur temple.
Yeah. Yeah. So Baba didn't like that because it was too showy. Mm-hmm. Too showy. Srila Goswami's writing this, so obviously there's something to it. But genuine spiritual emotions should, if they somehow come out, it's not considered wrong. But once you got to turn make a display of it. Everyone thinks I'm so great because I'm crying. Just see my devotion. Okay.
One should not quarrel or fight before the duty.
That's obvious.
One should not chastise anyone before the duty.
Okay.
One should not be charitable or to beggars before the deity.
Yeah, one should not chastise anyone. Sometimes that's a tough one.
Sometimes the word is used by the time as to chastise. Sometimes do that.
Yeah, like me. I always do that. If I can't do it individually, I just wait to be in class.
Like, except that Maharaj was saying that Gauranga was saying that a Brahmana, he brings out his frustration in Bhagavatam class. A Kshatriya in the meeting. A Vaishya at the workplace when he's actually doing the work. And a Shudra,
always.
Always.
nominated in class.
Yeah, I always do that.
I mean, I see so many things, and then I do it for the class, and then I get let everybody have it. I mean, that's cool. You know, in time and place and stuff. But, you know. But, like sometimes I'll make a mistake. And I do it, I think that they can do it consciously. If somebody's doing something wrong, and it's before the deed, and so I'll, like, go over there and tell them. And then I have to watch my mood. I think it's the mood you do it in. If you just very gently and very with great care and concern for the person, explain what is the standard, that's okay. But if you come in there and say, "Hey, you stupid idiot, why do you have your back to the deed?" Or something like that. Or just like somebody will stand in the aisle between the deity and Prabhupada. So I see somebody do it, they go, like that, you know? No, you can't do that. Exactly, you know? Just growl at everybody. Anyway, you just have to do it gently.
One should not look at it with the good before the people.
I don't think we have that problem here, so.
One should not speak very harshly to others before the deity.
Yeah. Just nice speeches, speaking harshly.
One should not wear it for a blanket before the deity.
Mean that animal, right?
Yeah. Nothing but
animal farm. Just considered to be contaminated.
And should not eulogize or praise anyone else before the deity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not only breath sometimes.
And you can discuss this one?
You mean like in class again?
No, just like you can discuss them, like, because devotees are all the time praising each other. Like sometimes before opening class, they give some praise, or during class, praising devotees.
Well, like this morning when Nitya was there, I said a few words introducing him in the class. Generally, we don't do that so much. We have to use it, we have to choose our words where we can speak nicely. And like when I see Ramaswami does that, like on a Sunday, you know, I have the Sunday program, and some guests will come into the temple. But generally, we just say a few words instead of giving it to a long thing. Like I did it with Indra Dreamer Maharaj. But you know, it's a touchy because it's also mentioned that one should not praise another and one should not criticize another, whatever the two one can praise. Generally, we don't do that in front of the Lord. It's a difficult one to deal with.
In the book, what Rise of Erosion, and then somebody discussed this point.
Where is
it? Chapter 8.
Very near the start.
Should I read?
Yeah, please.
As explained in Chapter 2, the point of performing all devotional activities is to increase and inspire our remembrance of Krishna. Keeping this in mind will help resolve any apparent contradiction. For example, Regulation 21, not to elogize or praise anyone before the deity, and Regulation 30, not to fight to offer praise in the presence of the spiritual master, appear contradictory. If the spiritual master is present before the deity, it seems unavoidable to commit one offense or the other. However, we can easily resolve such contradictions by keeping the proper perspective and seeing the regulation as aid for respectful remembrance of Krishna. Out of regard for the deity, we may choose to praise the spiritual master in our minds. Perhaps with discreet gesture of respect, or we may choose to openly praise him as the Lord's servant for the deity's pleasure. Neither is an offense, because they both ensure respectful remembrance of Krishna. The essential thing is to glorify Krishna and no one else. One can directly glorify Krishna, or can indirectly glorify him by glorifying his servant.
So that usually pertains to the spiritual master, or to the pure devotee. Yeah, and especially in regards to disciples. Disciples should also bow down when their spiritual master comes in, or they should at least bow down in their mind. But it's not an offense if one glorifies the pure devotee, because the pure devotee is not different than the Lord. He represents the Lord. So when you're praising the pure devotee, you're also praising the Lord. Because you praise the pure devotee, doesn't do anything outside of the Lord's desire. And you might say, for those who are not pure devotees, generally, one should be able to understand who's a pure devotee and who's not. But it's not always easily understandable. One has to understand the science very carefully. Understand who's a pure devotee and who's not. So, the injunction is there that one can do that. Okay?
One should not speak any names for the deity. One should not pass aids before the deity.
Question
myself. Yeah, that's. And you're supposed to go outside, or you just don't do it.
Now, what if the curtains are closed? I'm asking this question because last year I saw one Maharaj, we were chanting in japa, and he had very loud air right in the room. And I remember this injunction, went through the devotion, I got completely bewildered. I didn't know what to do.
When I first joined, it was understood that no passing air in the temple at all. That's what I did. But somehow or other, I start to maybe think that now it's okay to do that before, when the temple is closed. But generally, the injunction is not at all.
Because it just feels wrong.
Well, it mentions also passing air loudly is also an offense. Anywhere. Yeah. Anywhere. Well, no, anywhere in the temple. It's just silent. It's just like the temple. Better not to do it at all. That's the way I learned. Not at all. And if it can't be helped, it should be definitely not done with the deity. Then that's offense in any case. But when the temple's curtains are closed, I would think still one should try to avoid that. But it's not so serious if one does it. But loudly, that's definitely. I guess it's crude. I think that's crude.
One devotee asked me last year also, what if you were in kirtan though? And like you're jumping up and down, maybe you have some prasadam and it didn't work out for dancing, and the deity is there and it comes out. I mean, the devotee, hey,
what can you do? Take it back? This is not a long discussion point here.
I think most of it is to avoid his offense, you have to control our eating habits.
That was taught to us in the beginning too, that you should also control your eating habits.
Don't eat a lot of spicy food. Spices?
If you eat too much, you're going to pass. Yeah.
Yeah. Eat too much of spicy or gassy things.
Gassy things are cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli. I mean, all these things are cabbage.
There's lots of main vegetables in this temple.
Primary
vegetables.
Generally try to avoid it as much as possible, and then definitely before the deities when the curtains are open, and even when the curtains are closed. But if it's somehow or you can't, then it's not so bad if it's like that.
One should not say to worship the deity according to one's means.
Okay, read the rest.
In Bhagavad Gita it is stated that the Lord is satisfied if some devotee offers him even with leaf or a little water. This formula is described by the Lord universally. It is universally applicable even to the poorest man. But that does not mean that one who has sufficient means to worship the Lord, the renunciate should also adopt this method and try to satisfy the Lord simply by offering water and a milk. If he has sufficient means, he should offer nice decorations, nice flowers, nice foodstuffs, and observe all ceremonies. It is not that one should try to satisfy the Supreme Lord with a little water and a leaf, and for himself to spend all his money in sand
vessels.
It's
probably
we should type that up, put it on a flyer and hand out.
That's good. There's a story of the Christian tradition when Christ was at a banquet. And some man offered Christ $100, a big donation. And then some poor lady, she offered like something equal to a penny. So one friend of Christ said, "Look, did you see that man? He offered such a big donation." And Christ said, "For him that was no sacrifice. But do you see that lady? Because she offered that one penny, she will have to go without food." So the idea is that offering should be in the mood of sacrifice.
So also when persons give donation to the temple, especially if like nowadays, they give like things that are like very like not useful. Like someone someone donated some galoshes mints to the temple that were 5 or 6 years old. They said, "Here, donation to the temple."
Really?
Yeah, this is last year, the big last year. 5-6 year old galoshes, they say, "Here's the offering to the temple," they give. Or so, like car, they donate car. They can't use it. They say here's donation.
You know, for the temple, like pencil, like pens, all new, you know, package. And then when we opened it, nothing didn't work because we're very old, like 10 years old.
So many people are you writing on the work.
Well, they have something that
is salvation.
They don't like it. Go to the temple.
How do you give it to the salvation? Yeah, it's like the temple is not a place to be tough your stuff off.
In India, you receive more, like India, you get donation as old cows, you don't give any milk. And there's a bird. In Hyderabad, they gave a farm, which is actually a haunted place. They donated to ISKCON because they were not able to use it. That was in Prabhupada's time. They donated to ISKCON.
And we got rid of that.
But if you see most of the temples were bought because they didn't want, and we got it to go away.
Yeah, generally a donation is something that is a sacrifice or a nice gift.
Mm. I want to buy nice food stuff for a reason. People should sacrifice for
quality.
Pay for more quality?
Yeah, of course. Just like this milk we buy. We give the people donated milk, we buy the store-bought milk. It's garbage. Full of chemicals, full of all kinds of. It's just, you know, it's bad stuff. I don't even drink it. I don't give it to the babies.
What milk should we drink?
Store milk.
What milk should we drink?
Shouldn't we drink? Well, Prabhupada gave you a formula. We have our farms, we have our cows, and we produce milk, ghee, all milk products and then supply the temples with that. It's a whole take on it. That Prabhupada's stand. He wants farm communities. We're not fulfilling Prabhupada's instructions. He wanted farm communities to supply the foodstuffs to the temples. We're not doing it. We're still going out and buying all kinds of stuff and spending all the money.
He's doing
a lot
of this thing that he has to drive 10 miles to get groceries.
Yeah, it's all the penalty because you're not going to Prabhupada's side. Yeah, we don't follow Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada wanted farm communities. He says, open up restaurants in the city and have a farm and produce nice vegetables and ghee and ship it to the, and then open nice restaurants and people will come and they'll taste such nice food. Nothing like it. Such quality. First class ghee, first class vegetables. We go and buy, it's like the, you know, even those apples that you offer to the deity every day, it's terrible. Again, yesterday you gave me those apples. It's terrible. There's nothing to it. And then somebody buys me an apple in Whole Foods, and it's like, you know, first class. It's juicy, it's crispy, it's got flavor. And they get the deities all, and they keep saying they're buying the best.
Mariah, who argued with this is Washington apple is the best
quality.
Yeah, well, we totally said
there's a Washington apple restaurant.
They said organic is pretty expensive.
Yeah, it is the best quality restaurant depot, but that's just all garbage in there.
Now, considering as kind of situation, you know, financially, what a lot of our temples, especially in America, and then also our farming communities are unable to supply the temples with these facilities.
Here's the thing.
What should we do?
Well, you know, I used to run a temple in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I would go down to the food warehouses and get free donations of food that was not sellable, which is like a day or two old, but still. But I wouldn't, generally, the idea that it wasn't for the deities, that was for the devotees. Cook that and offer to Prabhupada. And serve it out for in these quantities for feasts. But the deleted deities should have the finest quality stuff. Keep in mind those very big items. Best, finest foods for the deities.
So for the deities, we should shop at Whole Foods and for the devotees, Restaurant Depot.
I guess that's the best of the worst situation. But generally, Prabhupada's instruction is farm communities. Just like that. He wanted us to get away from the dependence on the material society, especially in terms of food. And we use this junky corn oil. You still use that stuff here? Corn oil?
Yeah.
It's like motor oil.
Yeah,
junky motor oil.
And they reuse it, too.
When you heat, I did a whole survey. I publicized it here. It's when you heat oils like that, it becomes carcinogenic. That's why people get heart attacks and blocked arteries. That's why I don't eat the food down here.
It's not the main disease of this kind of thing.
Prabhupada didn't start a movement based on all these oils. It came with the ghee. The ghee is the food that's coming from the cow. It's healthy, it's tasty.
So why aren't we cooking things in ghee?
Yeah, that's what I've been fighting for years, and so many other people. Go to Chaupati in Bhagavanaswami's temple, in Chaupati. Everything's cooked in ghee, right?
Yeah.
They don't use any of this stuff.
That
was the idea that as an economic means, we need somehow or other. But the idea, again, is to have cows. Make your own ghee. But in the long run, it's more expensive because the health of the devotees go down. And you have to pay for the, you know, health.
Yep.
So that's the main reason I don't eat the food here, because of the oil. That's 100% oil and the hot spices. The hot spices, that's a traditional thing. You know, some people like it. I can't complain about it. But the oil is not necessary. It's just not necessary. And a lot of temples still do that. But
yes.
ghee.
Ghee. Is that expensive? But without having cows, is that expensive?
I mean, it's easy. When you have an Indian community, you get up on the Sunday feast and say, hey, please, if you want to offer some boga, bring some ghee. I've said that 100 times, and I'm just told, no, they won't do it. You shouldn't announce that. And they bring their oil, and they bring all kinds of stuff, corn oil, and all this.
I think so much rice instead of all that rice, extra rice. We have so much rice that we want to give it off to people.
They bring it. It's easy.
Even for deities, it is not good. Not as in ghee.
You guys haven't, I actually, not to say, not to sound, you haven't tasted prasad yet. Right? You haven't, you really haven't yet tasted prasad. When you go to certain places, you'll know the difference between what is prasad and what is.
I heard amongst them.
Krishna's pleased. Wow. It's a whole different thing.
One devotee was saying that I can, but if we're tasting, I can say whether it is offered or not.
Yes. Actually, when I taste it, I can also tell the person's consciousness. Whether if they were in anxiety, or if they were rushing, or it was just their consciousness was not really focused on anything. It's easy to pick up. You can tell after a while. So, prasadam is a whole different thing than what we're eating.
I say
prasadam. There's prasadam, and then they would say there's prasadam.
Other devotees have told me that the prasadam here is very nice compared to the temples.
Compared to, yeah.
By comparison, our temples in America.
Yeah.
Haribo.
It's
okay, I guess. But still, they use oil. They mix oil and ghee together.
Yeah.
In some cases. Yeah, in Bhuvaneshwar, so the food prasadam is pretty good, I guess. I mean, the cooks are good. The cooks are good. But still, it's not Prabhupada's program for oil. And most of Westerners can't take high spicy foods, so they just can't do it. What happened to that one devotee in the cook from Champari, the Bengali cook?
Yes, the Krishna.
Yeah, did that take him to the hospital?
Yeah, now he's in Gopal Grand.
Because his whole stomach was all ruined from eating hot spices.
Yeah.
He was a Bengali too.
Yeah. His feet, like raw.
Chili.
Yeah. No, in India you see it very common. You cook can eat raw chili.
It just burns the lining of your stomach and destroys.
Someone was saying, who eats chili is saying that when you eat heavy food, you need hot spices to digest it.
That's true, to some degree. You need spices. Jagra Thakurmala, he'll drink a whole glass of ginger juice at the end of a meal. Straight ginger juice. But then you read in the Bhagavad Gita in the 17th chapter, Krishna talks about food in a different mode. And foods that are hot, spicy, cause pain, and promote passion. After you eat, you should feel good. After you feel worse, terrible.
What about, well, we have to accept prasadam because it is a rule of. We know that our body can accept, but the only option that we have, and some devotees say, oh, you're offensive to the prasadam because you're taking out the chili from the food.
I think this is the health considerations. Here's the standard. You want to know the standard? You have very high, first quality cooked prasadam for the devotees. And then you cook separate for the devotees. And the Dhruvi prasadam should be tasty and simple and nutritious. And then you serve out the meals to the devotees, and everyone gets a little taste of Maha. That's a bit. Not that you eat large quantities of Maha. Because Maha prasadam is absolute. If you take a little bit or you take a lot, you're still getting the mercy. It's all the same. So for eating, you don't eat Maha prasadam, you honor it. And for regular meals, simple, nutritious, and very healthy prepared prasadam, that was Prabhupada's program. Tasty, but also quite simple. Not a lot of spices, not a lot of ghee, but nice to prepare. A cook should be first class. We just don't have any first class cooks. That can balance taste with health. Should have both of those. Not just one or the other. If it's just healthy stuff, there's no taste to it. they did that with golf on. All of us said, let the health committee go to hell. When he was sick. Because when Prabhupada was sick, he never took medicine. When Prabhupada was sick, he would always do one thing. He would adjust his diet. That's all he ever did. And by adjusting his diet, he would get healthy. I never believed in medicine. So, prasadam is food is supposed to be like medicine. Healthy, tasty, gives you nutritious, inspires you in your spiritual life. But then again, not too much, not too little. Also, okay. So,
one should not eat anything which is not offered first to Krishna.
So, any questions about that?
What about the
Shri Vishnu? This one is buying stuff outside and offering it. Better to avoid that as much as possible.
In Sankirtan?
Sankirtan is another
thing. It's not.
Or road trips.
If you're doing road trips, you just generally try to avoid, grains. Try to eat fruits. Salads, like
that.
I mean, if you can eat some grains, it's an emergency. I think the question is honesty. One should be as honest as possible, honoring the Lord's prasad. Not says that one who caters to the demands of the tongue cannot get Krishna. One who chases after the demand to satisfy. Because the idea of accepting, you go home and get a nice meal. Because home and get a nice meal. Right? Yeah?
I'm not going to comment.
I'm not going to comment on that. I've got a secret little thing going on here. So, yeah, the idea is accepting the prasadam of the deities means you're accepting what the Krishna eats means. That's in the submission and humility, I think. That's why Radhanaswami, when he goes on and he goes to different places, he just accepts what people give him. Because he understands that once you're not demanding certain kinds of food, but then when your health gets so bad, you have to make some arrangements. But now, even I stopped doing that now. But I don't eat here because of the oil. That's the only reason. The oil and the chilies, I just can't do it. It will kill me. It has to kill me. Nothing more. Nothing more.
could be six. One should not fail to offer fresh fruits and grains to Krishna according to the season.
Yeah, so once you follow that. Generally in India that's done. There's mango season, there's grape season, there's guava season. So people get offered, temples offer according to the season. Here we don't follow it because nothing's seasonal.
Not for mango in winter time.
Just like I was talking to Apta Khan. He can eat mango in India, but when he comes to eating mango in America, he gets boils. He's got a boil because he's eating American mango. But they're artificially grown and they're shipped. The idea is that we should do everything locally. Again, the farm communities are the basis. Everything should be done as local as possible. That's the principle. But we can't avoid that somehow because mostly foods are shipped in from different places. You grow in California or Florida, shipped across country in big trucks, and then you get the stores for a long time and you buy it. But when it comes to spending money, I think we shouldn't skip on quality for both the devotees and the deities. It's fine, should be the best foods. As quality is concerned.
So I continue?
Yeah, unless there's a question.
After food has been cooked, no one should be offered anything tough unless it is first offered to the meat.
Yeah, no one should taste it and see if it's okay.
Well, sometimes they cook and people offer some devotee steak. They don't eat, but they pack it.
So that's emergency. Right? Because you can't be there. You pack it, and then it's offered at a certain point, yeah. Then it becomes the shop. That's all right. But that's not a standard. That's just a consideration, according to you. Like, you have to go out and preach. Just like Sankirtan devotees, sometimes have to leave early in the morning. So they pack whatever is there, and then it's offered. But they don't eat it or think about it until it's offered like this.
One should not sit with his back toward the deity. One should not offer obeisances silently to the spiritual master. Or in other words, one should recite aloud the prayers to the spiritual master while offering obeisances.
Okay. This is the one that falls short of. Yeah. We have to say the final mantras out loud. You do that on initiation. When someone gets initiation, you make sure. You chant the final mantras out loud. Everyone hears. You can do it, not loud, but you can do it audibly. That's the whole idea. It should be done audibly, not just silently in your mind.
There was one devotee, I remember first coming on the temple 2 years ago. He would chant pranam mantras so loud that you couldn't even hear yourself say them, even in your mind you couldn't hear it. So when you say audibly, like, is it audible enough that there's clear, I'm asking, like, clearly they can hear what you're saying, or and sometimes you hear it and it's like, it just sounds like...
You're chanting your pranam mantras to the Lord or to the spiritual master, so they should be able to hear it. They're there, so they can hear it. So the word, you see the word here, loud, aloud is in, it's in a different italicized, it's italicized, it's emphasized, aloud. So you recite aloud, that means audible. I'll give you an example. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutanaya Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami. That's alright. You're hearing it and it's audible. You should hear and you should say it out loud. Nama Om. I mean, that's just some show. That's not the intention. People are. You get all kinds, you know. It's called you. You You think nowadays it's that way. You see the old days. God, these guys are really crazy people. I mean, really crazy.
One should not fail to offer some praise in the presence of a spiritual master.
Yeah, you should offer some praise to the spiritual master. If it's praise, you can do that in your mind. Praise the Lord, praise the spiritual master. Just say something. Yeah. Some prayer, authorized prayer is good. Or just some general feelings of praise. By your mercy, my dear Guru Maharaj, you have picked me up from this ocean of birth and death and given me an opportunity for eternal life. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for giving us the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because of that, we are eternally benefited. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for your sacrifice in spreading Krishna. These are all feelings of appreciation, gratitude, comes out in the form of prayer. You know, we should show our appreciation, we should show it. Actually, this is Vaishnava nature. It should be actually done all the time. In the circle of great Vaishnavas, what are they doing? They're praising each other and then praising the Lord. That's all they're doing, really. Not out of show, but out of actually genuine appreciation. Okay.
One should not bow himself before the spiritual master.
Any questions regarding that? When should that praise himself at all? Speaking of the coming of the spiritual master. Right? You don't do that at all at any time. A devotee is embarrassed if he somehow sometimes has to use himself as an example to show a point. A good point sometimes one will do that, but that's also not the best. Once he never praise himself at all. You know, especially before the spiritual master.
If you see other gurus, like most of the disciples, like, because there is no conception of humility, so they go in front of the guru, like, they start telling about themselves, I'm doing this, I'm doing this.
Who cares?
Yeah. I've seen this so much. Is it the Lord to tell the spiritual master what the service that we are doing?
You can tell, yeah. You can tell the service you do in a humble way. Giving all credit to his mercy that you're able to do it. We never consider ourselves the doer. We consider ourselves the object of the mercy of the Lord and the spiritual master and the assembly of Vaishnavas. And you'll see, Krishna will show you sometimes what you're really made of. When you think you're great, and just if you remove his mercy, and you just like floundering like a dead fish, you know. Like that. As soon as you start actually believing you're great and you're thinking you're special, and Krishna just starts taking the mercy away, and you start seeing. So one should always remain humble, and one should not, you know, praise himself at all at any time. Especially before the spiritual master. Spiritual master asks, and I ask you, what is your service? Or what are you doing? You may speak in a humble way. Speak in a way that is giving credit to his mercy for whatever you've done. Giving credit to the Lord for whatever you've done. That's everything. Good, next one.
One should not deride the demigods before the deities.
One should not deride the demigods at all, even before the deities. We honor, and I was speaking with Sunil Madhava about this morning, something that they think, wow, yeah, I worship Krishna, but what am I? Shiva is very expensive. They put down other demigods like Brahma, Shiva. There was a whole series of articles in the back of Godhead magazine glorifying the various demigods for their position. They're great servitors. They're doing tremendous service to the world. They're not objects of our worship, but they're objects of our respect. At the same time, the same principle applies to all of the entities. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, somehow or other I live in this world because I give respect to everyone accordingly. So we respect everyone according to their position. And we have to know how to respect people according to their position. That comes by education. But no one should be derided, especially the demigods. Okay? This is a list of 32 offenses. Besides these, there are a number of offenses which are mentioned in the Varaha Purana. They are as follows. Okay, let's go through these again. One should continue, Gonzalo.
One should not touch the deity in a dark room.
No. It should always be light.
One should not fail to strictly follow the rules and regulations in worshipping the deity.
Mm. One should not be whimsical. Yeah.
One should not enter the temple of the deity without first making some song.
So what do we do? You have those chimes and bells.
Yeah.
And if they're not there, and certain you go and you travel to certain temples, you may not find them. It's like if you go to the Vrindavan, you won't find them. You have to knock on the door and open the door and go. You make some sound, you knock. It's like you're entering someone's house and then you introduce your entrance by a knock or a bell or something. Announce yourself. Some devotees pass up that thing. You should instruct each other about that. When you see somebody not doing that, tell them you should learn that. So it's for, it's not just so some nice sound.
What if there's a singer?
Generally, if there's something like that, better than just do it yourself. And they're not instructing you really. But they should know that.
One should not offer any food stuff to the deity which has been seen by dogs or other lower animals.
Yeah, it's a fence. Dogs or any lower animals see something that cannot be offered.
Okay, charity.
Chubby.
Charity.
Yeah. They come to the kitchen during the cooking?
No, when we offer. When we are doing the food, we are not putting, looking for covering.
It should be. Coming up and down the stairs.
Yeah.
If you're walking up the stairs with a plate and someone sees it, it's considered not to be offerable.
You should cover it.
That's why a lot of times I think the stuff that's being offered there is not prasad. Because Krishna is Krishna, he knows. He'll accept what he wants. If he doesn't want to accept it, he won't accept it. And if we don't follow the rules and regulations, we may not want to accept it. On the basis that his pure devotee has established his worship in a certain way, he may not accept it. Up to Krishna. But we follow the principles. No one should see the offering before the meeting, except those who are preparing it. That's why no one's allowed in the deity kitchen while cooking is going on.
This is considered offense if we are not following this rule, but at the same time the authorities are not asking us to do that.
Yeah, they're committing offenses. You're not getting the full reaction, they're getting it. That's why you see leaders fall down all the time. Temple presidents don't last long. Or they're miserable. The bigger your position, the more you can and get the bliss of Krishna consciousness. Because Prabhupada says you make advancement in spiritual life by how much you take on responsibility to serve Krishna. But at the same time, your responsibility is a double-edged sword. If you use your responsibility in the wrong way, or if you're not coming up to the standard of what it means to follow the principles according to your service and your ashram, then you're also, just like the example is, you go to Vrindavan, and any service you perform in Vrindavan counts 1,000 times more than any other place in spiritual policy. But the offenses also count 1,000 times more. So it's a double-edged sword. So any situation is the more responsibility you have, the more position you have, the more you can make advancement, but all the more and the faster you can also go down if you're not fulfilling the obligation in the proper way. So if those who were, there was an example in New York City when the temple president married the daughter of Toyota. She was a Japanese girl. And he married her with some arrangements. So she came into the temple and then she was putting eggs in the food.
Eggs.
You know what eggs are?
Yeah.
She was cooking with eggs, or she was actually allowing cooking with eggs in the food. So.
No eggs.
Huh?
For the deities.
Yeah. And the devotees. It was a big scandal. It was in New York Temple. It was in 1973, I remember. That's when the first year I joined. I was hearing about all the scandal the first year I joined. So, and then after some time, there was a big. Some devotees were protesting, some didn't want to burn her out. So Prabhupada came in and he gave two different chastisements. He said, for the senior devotees, you're all at fault for not doing anything. And for the junior devotees, really, because you stayed and didn't go away, that was your credit. Because some people went away, they left the temple. And Prabhupada said, the junior devotees who left the temple, they made a mistake, they should have stayed. And the senior devotees, they allowed it to go on, that was their mistake. So he made a distinction in how people should have acted according to that situation. So, if you're doing something that apparently is against the scriptures, but it's being sanctioned by the senior devotees, you can follow it, but at the same time, you may also take it to another level. You may also take it to the next higher level and say, this is going on in the name of Krishna consciousness, this is all right. So I just like I see it. There's this whole idea of peacock fan, they start it, they stop it. This is wrong. It's when you start it, you start it. You can't stop something once you start it. Once you introduce the peacock fan, it stays until the next season and you take it off. One day it's warm, the next day it's cold, they take it out. Oh, they do that here. And I keep telling them, but still they do it. Like nobody understands clearly. That's why Kshatriyas are meant to run the temples. Kshatriyas are. You have to have Kshatriyas running the temples. Kshatriyas are people who know how to do things and know how to get things done. They're tough. Managers have to be tough. You have to have strong managers who know the principles and who work under the guidance of the Brahmins or the sannyasis and the Buddhas. That's why we have to know the scriptures also. But then again, how to apply the scriptures may be according to time, place, and circumstance. Okay.
One should not break silence while worshipping.
Where's that one? Did we skip one?
Number five.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And she, when they engage in worshiping us, she's not supposed to talk. And you're doing the puja, pujari should not speak while he's doing the puja. If he needs something, he can indicate. He should not speak.
One should not pass within or evacuate while engaging in worshiping.
That meaning, what it means is that if you pass in urine or evacuating, then you go back on the altar with the same clothes. It's wrong. The clothes are contaminated and you're contaminated. So once you take bath, we don't follow, we follow the evacuation thing very carefully when our temple is gathered. Sure. If you don't, it's an offense. And these offenses count. So I was always taught, you know, after evacuating, you always, yeah, I even do that today, even if I don't go on the altar. I consider myself contaminated, so I always take a bath. Even if it's in the middle of the day, I do it. That's what I was trying to do. Passing urine, you know, your clothes are considered. Even if you eat and these clothes, you can't go on the altar.
Unless it applies for a question,
Good question. I don't think so. Tulsi has never done in front of the duties anyway. Well, she's a pure devotee. She's very merciful. But just to come into the temple room after evacuating, even with the same clothes, even if you take a bath,
yeah,
and if you pass through in those clothes, that's enough. That's against the principles of suci. You can't wear those same clothes again. Therefore, I remember in Vrindavan we used to have, you know, there was a common jacket that we would use. It was in the stool in the bathhouse. If you had a pass stool, you put on that jacket, and then you go out into the woods and pass stool and take a bath and put your clothes back on. Or you could have a set of clothes which are just for that, and then you take them off, and then you put on your good clothes again. So you know, clothes should be careful. They should always be clean. Always be clean. And if you're going on the altar, clothes you eat in, clothes you pass urine or stool in, or if you're not, even you can't go on, but to speak about the clothes.
Yeah. You have a cloth on now, you have to evacuate. And you take this cloth off and put your conscience on where you stuff and everything, and you come back and put this cloth back on.
Yeah. Why don't you take it off? I was watching Ravana Swami. He would take 6 baths a day. Every time before he went on the altar. 6, even in the winter time, he was taking 6 baths. That means he was doing every arti and every offering at one time. So now 6 offerings and 6 artis a day. So he was bathing 6 times a day. I tell you. That's why his health is down. Because he's performed all these austerities. That's one of the reasons. The point is that, you know, suciness is one of the highest principles in Dhamma. The highest principle. The temple should be so clean. So clean. The DD room, very clean. That's why we don't go in the DD room with ordinary clothes on. It's considered being unclean. Or even when you speak about the altar, of course, we never do that. If you touch your face, you touch your hand, you touch your, you know, part of your body, you should wash your hand, purify your hand. It's all part of the rules of suci.
one should not offer incense without offering some flour.
That's the standard.
But about when we want to burn an incense, like in a room, and we offer to Prabhupada, that's different.
This is for offer.
Using a flower without any fragrance should not be offered.
That really fries me. She a nice flower. No problem, said. Prabhupada said, a beautiful girl without any brains is like a flower without any fragrance. You ever see a beautiful girl? Looks nice, right? And you go there and she starts speaking. Same way. This morning I was looking for, I said, oh, there's a nice flower, I'm going to bring it to you. Not a nice flower. I said, pick it up. Put it down, I saw another one. I thought, get this one. It's just like a total disappointment.
Like a total disappointment.
We bring all these, you know, fragrant oils back from India. We got whole jars of them. That's what they're for. You're supposed to put them on the flower. I really want to tear into this beauty department. Straighten it out. I really do. Because I've done beauty worship for 8 years straight. I was full-time Punjabi, full-time cook. And I know all these standards, but you know, I just get dry when I see all this stuff. I know what Prabhupada's standards are. Anyway.
One should not fail to wash his teeth very carefully every day.
Okay. You want to switch now? Jerry, you can read for a while. What's the first thing we do in the morning? Wash your feet, even before you bathe.
But this after, we go to the bath to wash the feet. After we bath, we in and do it, then we wash
the feet. The first thing is you usually pass urine, and then you wash your teeth, and then you pass through after. That's what I did.
Yeah. I heard that if you wash your teeth and then you pass it through, you have to wash again your teeth.
Well, you have to wash your bottle. Oh, really? Never heard that. Yeah.
Pushar is for you. Because when you
can pass it through,
you are contaminated again.
You just have to take a bath.
Yeah.
After you take a bath through, no matter what. But that doesn't mean your bath doesn't include your mouth, I guess.
In Argentina, you pass through, you cut your knife, everything, and then you pass. I don't know, wrong.
You should do everything before you pass through, right?
Well, if you read the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it says that the first thing you do in the morning is brush your teeth. You go to your kind of toad. Nothing else wrong with it. To give the standard for Vaishnava etiquette. The first thing you do when you go in the bathroom is brush your teeth. You can pass urine still after. If you pass urine first. I don't think it's really that. Whether the well order comes in. As long as you do those three. As long as the last thing you do is bathe. I think that takes care of all that. But you shouldn't brush your teeth after you bathe.
Yeah.
Somebody else in there don't really brush their teeth good, I think. It's a shower of teeth.
No, it's not good.
Okay. And concerning, okay, I guess this is a little different thing, but concerning bath in the morning, how long should one take? Because some devotees out, and some devotees 5 minutes.
I think a shower should last about 2 minutes.
That's what I think.
If it's 2 or 3 minutes, it should get wet, definitely. And you should use soap. Of course, in the old days we never had soap. Should use soap and wash thoroughly. And in the morning, the first bath is the pheromone. Because with sleep, your body exudes all kinds of impurities. It comes out while you're sleeping. And therefore, you should take a bath. It says even during in the middle of the day, if you sleep for more than 1 hour, you should take a bath when you get up. If you sleep for more than 1 hour, you're in bed. Generally, you try not to do that unless it's an emergency.
And the ultimate work up is probably an hour and then go again.
Get up and go on the bed.
Before 1 hour, they wake up for some time, then they will go.
Another cheating mentality.
Yes. That's not me. Sleep for 2 hours, but you wake up for 15 minutes.
Oh, come on.
That's
cheating.
That's cheating. That's cheating.
Come on.
Didn't we read in one statement? Yeah, the only qualification for inquiring about religious principles
is sincerity.
If one is actually very serious about devotional service, then all his purposes will be served without any delay. One statement from the Narada Guru.
In India, some people do fasting on some days. So what they do is, the previous night, they eat just before midnight, 12 o'clock. They eat at 11:30. And on the day when they fast, so they fast till 12, and after 12 they again eat.
Mm-hmm. Such a difficult thing not to eat. Eating is another form of addiction. Actually, at one point when you fast, if you fast for a while, you actually lose your hunger, and you actually start to feel good. And then after a while, you're thinking, I don't want to eat. But it's nice.
Breakfast and dinner?
In India, they eat three square meals a day. Some places in the culture is that big breakfast, big lunch, big evening. this is an Indian temple.
I was so amazed that when I first went into the temple, I'm thinking all the time, grow up. Breakfast conception means like French toast, pancakes, cereal, orange juice, something like that. But when you came to the temple, dinner for morning, dinner for lunch, dinner for evening time.
It's wrong. Prabhupada never had big meals for evening. Never. In the evening, he said a little hot milk, popcorn. That's when he started off. And then you could have, maybe a little something. We got all these Bengalis and Indian people, and would they eat big at night? That's their culture. Come from the villages and they bring all that idea to you. It's not Prabhupada's program. Prabhupada said eating big at night is one of the worst things to destroy your spiritual life.
Destroy.
Yeah, really.
And I fought against this whole schedule change, but they override me again.
No, we're eating 8 o'clock.
Big meal.
No, yeah, because you probably are eating 7:30.
But you don't eat lunch, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not Prabhupada's program. Prabhupada's program is a light breakfast, a good meal, and then a light evening.
Program your program, you see.
They canceled the lunch program because there were so many guests coming. Like, for lunch here, would be like 50 people would be here to take lunch. So they totally said, just make enough for Indians only. Then we have to suffer. Then now they're making it because of the so-called restaurant. Now we have to eat this, and you cannot take before 8:15.
Now it's
8:15.
They
said
you
cannot take before 8:15.
Otherwise,
how do you guys
get up in the morning? Yeah. And usually, if you take heavy in the night, in the morning, you can chant, you don't feel
stuff. You're sleeping also, you can also have nocturnal emissions with too much eating at night. And that'll destroy your spiritual life also. Fast. If it comes naturally, that's one thing, but if it comes by eating too much, then that's a fall down. So you have to avoid that. That's, you should not eat that night generally. The problem is, there's probably a statement about that. He said, take a piece of apple. Curse Prabhupada. But he gave the program a little hot milk. And if you can't take milk, you can eat. If you eat a little, the idea is you take a little something just to keep the mind happy. You go to sleep anyway. What the hell's the difference? You void it out. What do you need food for? Right? I never eat at night unless I go to a program, and then I can't turn down people, so I eat a little something. Like last night, I ate a little something that day. But when I'm near the temple, I never eat at night. Never. I eat lunch and that's it. And I eat breakfast. And Prabhupada told us, okay, breakfast with fruit, some chickpeas. He's given chickpeas, fruit, and some maha sweet or something like that. Generally, we don't take sweets late either. No yogurt after 4 o'clock, Prabhupada taught us that. Yogurt cools the body down. It's not so good. Especially in the wintertime. No almonds at night. No cashews at night. Nuts at night are really bad. All the brahmacharis are having a lot of trouble.
But what?
Cashews, eating nuts. High in protein, high in energy. You just rest. The thing is, eating at night causes the body to have to work while you're sleeping. And therefore you don't rest. You don't fully rest.
From which rice you can make some? You can make cheap rice for 1 week. Cheap rice is very easy to make.
Some
kind of cheap rice.
Something simple.
Because we eat at 8:15. And it's supposed to table for Gurdas, and it's heavy.
Yeah.
It's all rich.
Yeah. Not meant for me.
Not meant for them.
I was always so, I like to eat. Sometimes I eat a lot, but if I eat a lot, I never eat rich food. I eat simple food. Eat a little extra simple food. It's not going to really hurt you so much. But at night, you shouldn't fill the belly up because digestion. Prabhupada says the digestion works according to the position of the sun. When the sun is in the highest place in the atmosphere, the power of digestion is increased, or is at its maximum. As the sun goes down, the power of digestion also decreases. So it's very hard to digest after sunset. It's more difficult because of the energy. So generally, we don't eat anymore. And even if you eat at night and you wake up, sometimes you eat at night late and you have a big meal and you wake up about 3 or 4 hours later and you feel good, you got all this energy. But your mind is not there. It's kind of fuzzy. It's so fuzzy yet. And it catches up with you later. So I don't know what you guys can do, but in the Kalki, that's one of the reasons why he left his temple. He's complaining about the food and the person. We're trying to satisfy the Indian culture rather than the Vaishnava culture. I don't want to speak against the temple, but I don't think it's healthy. I think he should take a nice meal and for lunch. And then if you have a big breakfast, and then you can do that and then somehow or other take a light lunch and a light evening. like, you know, one of the things we used to do is take them down the room, go out early, they would take a big breakfast, and then they wouldn't even eat lunch. They'd have some fruit or some dates, something quick in the afternoon. And come back at night, have a little lunch or party, a little sushi or something. And especially rice at night. Rice is not good.
Why is that?
I don't know. No, it's just somehow or other just makes it. You know, I mean, what's his name? Mahanidhi Swami writes that in his book, The Nectar, and what's it? The Nectar of the Holy Name. That one, it makes it hard for one's job in the morning.
Yeah.
Take rice at night. I never take rice at
night. It's very hard to digest. I cannot digest
it. Yeah. I'll never eat rice at night. I always, if I have to eat something, I eat chapatis. And even a little light, one or two. But also, there's a lot of foods I avoid at night. A lot, like 90%. There's only certain ones I cook.
I think khichdi is okay.
Khichdi is good.
Khichdi is good.
Khichdi, because it's cooked in a certain way.
Yeah.
It's okay. Khichdi is all right at night. But rice is not. The way it's cooked.
Yeah.
When it blends with the dal, it becomes something different. So just avoid eating heavy at night. I mean, you're hungry sometimes, you know. So at that time, you can also become very hungry. But it's better not to. You'll find your job is a lot easier.
Yeah.
And it's a lot, not only a lot easier, but at the same time, at least. Your mind is a lot clearer, under fuzzy. Okay. Or you don't fall into the mode of passion. Anyway, trial and error. It takes a while to really get used to it. No one is faulting anyone. It's the same as you try to see. Because the principle of bhakti is to accept things favorable. Reject things unfavorable. So you have to see what works for your devotional service and what generally hurts your devotional service. So if you're honestly trying to do that, you'll eat and sleep according to what's best for you from your Krishna consciousness, and not what you like to do, what's desirable for the senses. Should we stop here at 6:10 now? You want to go?
Yeah.
Jerry?
This is fine.
I was thinking of finishing up just and not worrying about the community class. Make an exception because of the chapter. And I already have another class after this week. So why don't we can finish up to the 10 offenses. We don't have to do those, but let's keep going. One should number 10.
Right. One should not enter the temple directly after sexual intercourse.
Okay. That's obvious.
Okay. One should not touch a woman during her menstrual period.
Okay. When an injured performed a sinful act of killing with Vishwarupa, he had to dispense with the reactions of killing a Brahmin and sent it from four directions. So because of those four people got the sinful reactions of Indra. One is water has foam. Water has bubbles. Deserts. Because of that, deserts appear. Trees have sap. And women have menstrual periods. So, you can thank Israel for that.
It's like the original sin.
Yeah, exactly. He dispensed that.
Deserts have what?
There's deserts. Oh. Deserts is just not a nice place. these are the four. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. This is not some kind of fictitious thing. Indra is so powerful that he was able to dispense those four reactions into four different areas. Some women have menstrual periods. Okay, so they're considered to be, they can't go in, I mean, all the identity, even they don't even come out in some places, right? Mm-hmm. They just, yeah. Okay.
Number 12, one should not enter the temple after touching a dead body.
That's more like an injury to see that. Yeah.
Is there a lot of dead bodies there?
What?
Is there a lot of dead bodies there?
Yeah, they're dead, but they don't see. They don't such social.
They don't have like funeral parlors in the field.
Oh, okay.
What they do is if someone dies, they take the body on procession and they bring it to the river and the Ghat. And they light it on fire and they throw the ashes in the water. And it's public, everyone sees that.
So it's not hidden like it.
It's not here. Mm-hmm. The whole, over the whole community knows about it.
Yeah. Someone dies and sometimes they just cover the body up and let it lay there.
Yeah. Like when someone dies in some house, they keep a fire outside the house. That's the indication that someone is dead.
Number 13, one should not enter the temple wearing garments of red or blue color or garments which are unwashed.
Unwashed is not the name, but why don't we, now this is the one that I people get concerned about. Why don't we use red or blue color?
Because they attract it.
Yeah, because they attract your attention away from Krishna and Arjuna. That's the idea. One should not divert one's other people's attention away from the Lord by having attractive dress.
Blue is considered attractive? Because if you wear yellow, it's more attractive than.
You want to rewrite it?
I'm just saying.
That's sorry. These are loud. Blue and red are kind of loud colors.
Yes, the power colors.
The power colors, in fact. Actually,
what type of blue is
that? Yellow is the color of the mode of goodness, red is the color of the mode of passion, and blue is the color of the mode of ignorance, right?
Well, what type of blue? Because there's something red is the blue. Like, yeah. Every blue also almost looks black, and sometimes you can't tell. Like,
no,
there are so many varieties of blue. Like, this is blue, this, I don't know what type of blue.
That's what you're going to do.
Yeah, that's what I always say, it's like a violet purplish color.
It looks almost—it's really dark.
Yeah, it's really dark.
So
most of the time, it was more of ignorance.
I follow that. You know. I don't wear any red or blue. But when it comes to ladies, you know, they sometimes they break that.
Yeah, these are the two main colors.
Yeah. We used to wear blues with doggies and then.
Blue sweater?
Outside. Yeah, sort of blue. No, like this.
Oh, jacket?
Even our babies. No, Sankirtan. That's all doggies. Maybe the contribution of blue. And then it's called. I used to use.
I don't like any thing, any logos on any ships. I don't wear logo shirts in the temple. I wear, like somebody gave me this shirt. It says, green, 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 farm, farm, farm. It was like a promoting self-sufficiency. I wear it to sleep. It's my t-shirt for sleeping. I have a set of sleeping clothes. I have a whole set of clothes that I only sleep in. And, you know, if they're red or blue and I like, you know, I don't want to throw them out, I just use them for sleeping or something. But in the temple, or even in public, generally devotees wear saffron or some kind of, you know, color that's not so conspicuous, like brown. Black devotees generally don't wear black. Black is a color of death. It's a color of darkness. Like the black pants on.
In India, traditional families, they don't allow any black clothes. No black pants, no black
pants. Go to London, It's down the streets in London, everybody's wears black.
And my mother never allows me to wear any black.
I don't like black either. I never wear any black clothes. Black is a sign of, it's a sign of darkness.
Questions are just most of the
dresses are black. Black is a more nice quality than black.
Yeah, black is the color of, it's more or less a demonic color. It represents, I don't know, it represents darkness and moroseness. You know, you don't feel enlightened once you see someone in black. Yeah, I think, isn't that when someone dies, sometimes they put on black?
No.
To indicate a death?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a color for mourning, too.
Story of Maharaj Parikshit attacking Kali. I think Kali was wearing black garments.
Yeah.
It's mentioned in Kali.
I will wear black shoes, black socks. Okay, next one.
14. One should not enter the temple after seeing a dead body.
Okay. We talked about that enough.
15. One should not pass air within the temple.
We went over that.
16. One should not be angry within the temple.
It's obvious anger is a mode of passion.
So for anger, she would be.
Definitely. Okay, 17.
One should not enter the temple after visiting a crematorium. 18. One should not belch before the deity. So until one has fully digested his food, he should not enter the temple.
We don't follow that, but if you're going to belch, you should turn in another direction.
19. One should not smoke marijuana or ganja.
Give me some of the hippies.
Well, it's also for the Shivites.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what this one is all about, for the Shivites. Because they smoke ganja and come to the temple.
20. One should not take opium or similar intoxicants.
How did Rupa Goswami mention that?
Huh?
How did Rupa Goswami mention that? Opium, ganja.
Well, Prabhupada says, you know, the sadhus, they smoke the hookah pipe, right? That's traditional. Opium. It's a form of intoxication. I think there's even places, we'll get to it. And I'll see it, it'll come up. Another one about intoxication. Okay.
21. One should not enter the deity room or touch the body of the deity after having smeared oil over his body.
Who knows the great understanding of that one? Well, generally, you don't put oil on the body anyway. Not for brahmacharis or sannyasis. You never put oil on your body. Considered to be outside of that ashram's etiquette. People in Grihastha life, they do that.
What about Shiva?
Oil?
Yeah, I see some damage. Put oil on the Shiva.
I have a question about just like body types in general, like butterflies, especially in wintertime, skin becomes very dry. So then, like, some oil, like on petroleum or gasoline.
Yeah.
If it's that's the consideration. But this is oil from
shine the body.
Oil muscles. Oil is outside of sannyasas.
Mustard.
I think he recommended to devote it. Mustard oil is to have.
Yeah, mustard or sandalwood for the head.
Yeah.
Mustard is hot, and on is cold. You know, generally, if you get an oil massage, you know, it's still going to the temple with that.
Mm-hmm. 22, one should not show disrespect to a scripture teaching about the supremacy of the Lord.
That's a good one. There's a whole purport in the Bhagavatam which mentions that one should not disrespect any religious scripture. So, Christian name, Christianity, or Islam, they talk about the supremacy of the Lord, so one should not show disrespect.
Did you have some written?
I have it written down somewhere in the sixth canto.
Sixth
canto. The whole Abba talks about how it's a
really. Is that in the translation also?
There's an indication of it in the translation, Abba expands on it in the purport.
Because many times when we go by other religions, like in India, like people can't accept glorifying Islam.
You don't have to glorify, but you don't have to disrespect either.
Glorify means that there is also one part which is not taking to the highest goal, but it is doing something.
Right. The point is that the whole just like. No one should destroy the principle of bhakti wherever it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the idea of, what do? We preach to the non-devotees who are somewhat atheist about the universal form of the Lord. There's a whole section about the universe. The universal form of the Lord is an imaginary form. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But we do that in order to give people a sense of reverence to something higher. So wherever there's reverence to something higher, that's an element of bhakti, although it's very in its basic stages. So one should not criticize that, but one can speak about different variations of that in order to show certain points. But not that one does that in a way that can show one's supremacy over another situation. It's a certain way. So, Prabhupada said if one derides other scriptures, it agitates one's mind.
Yeah.
It causes mental agitation. So, criticizing others is when you find your mind starts becoming, unsettled. Okay, so, where are we?
23.
Mm-hmm.
One should not introduce any opposing scripture.
Any comment on that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something contrary to something Prabhupada said.
20.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
24. One should not chew betel before the deity.
So betel is a form of
intoxication?
Yeah. And you see when we have our weddings, they bring the bait on and spit it on the walls. When I first joined New Vrindavan, we were offering bait to the deities every day. It was part of the offering. I know, because I did the offering. And I would cut up the bait. I had bait nuts, and I would split it into quarters, or the betel nut cutter, specifically, and we would offer it to Krishna. But then that prasadam was not distributed. I don't know what we did with it. I think we threw it. Because
Chopali we gave to the workers.
They used to be offered there in Chopali.
Yeah,
they still offered there.
Yeah, for the whole farm.
Oh, that's nice. Because that's, when Ranak Swami, again, he was with me in the Vrindavan, he knows. So. Betel's good. We can offer betel here, but I'm afraid what will happen. I told the deities look really skinny here. And they're not eating right.
Yeah.
They do. You see some of the old pictures of Kishore, they're really fat. They look kind of like they're performing something like Chantamas or something. Yeah, standard for offering him is not good. It's really low. You guys can somehow or other, don't be afraid to speak out if you know what you're thinking about. Standard is very low here.
So, first 2 years, other than some advice, always where we're like none of the fruits only. And sometimes I would speak out, but they never listen. They don't listen to you, Maharaj, you just speak of us.
What does speak of us?
Because there's no one to listen to that.
Yeah, there's no one.
Who would you speak? Because there's no thought.
Yeah, kitchen, Radharani is in charge of the kitchen. Okay, so, any other discussion? Betel. There's two kinds of betel, right? There are many kinds. Some are more intoxicated than others, right?
Yeah, some are like flavor bitters, different flavors. Yeah, that's very intoxicating flavor. Some flavors, if you take, it's like almost like drinking wine.
How do you call? We're not Indians with Vaishnavas. Okay, next one.
25. One should not offer flour which was kept in an unclean pot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes that happens.
26. One should not worship the Lord while sitting on the bare floor. One must have a sitting place or carpet.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, when they offer puja, in some places they sit. But they have to sit on something. We stand also when we stand on a mat or some kind of, you know, rug. Yeah. Well, those rugs are even off. You're not supposed to sit there. Those rugs are muji. You should have like these bamboo things that you're saying.
So when we are doing like Mangalarti, should we be standing on these rugs?
You mean when we're in the general audience? No, this is for pujari.
Just for the pujari, okay.
Yeah. Even in Prabhupada's puja.
27. One should not touch the deity before one has completed taking a bath. 28. One should not decorate his forehead with three-line tilak.
She likes it?
Sure.
Or Ramanuja.
I think
Ramanuja is the
Vaishnava,
right?
Maybe
that's
Ramanuja.
Ramanuja
is two
lines,
right?
It's
three
lines. Why can't one label? That's a different type of.
Yeah.
Because some Ramanuja is two, it's like the real fat ones.
Yeah.
And some are like the skinny ones, like this.
Lord Chaitanya, I heard he liked thin line tilak. I read it. Chaitanya Bhagavat talks about it. The thin line tilak is what Chaitanya's marking. Not fat. Okay. And also, Lord Chaitanya was very strict about wearing it all the time.
What?
Wearing it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
29. One should not enter the temple without washing his hands and feet.
Okay, we got a whole nice paragraph.
Other rules are that one should not offer foodstuff which is cooked by a non-Vajnava. One should not worship the deity before a non-devotee. And one should not engage himself in the worship of the Lord while seeing a non-devotee.
On this point, like my new guests come, you know, they're pretty much like in a non-devotee category. So when we want to show them around the temple, we should not walk in, offer no obeisances, you know, oh wait, hold on, let me, and then offer obeisances for Prabhupada, or should we? Because if you do, they become completely like, they're like, oh my God, they're worshiping this man.
Yeah, I do it, but I do it very discreetly. And sometimes I'm also conscious that I shouldn't do it, if I do it in my mind. You have to use your discretion. You know, like I preached to the Christians the other day when I came in and I offered my obeisances because they were Christians. Yeah, so they would understand that we do have some reverence when we go into temples. But I also feel a little self-conscious in some cases. Yeah.
Well, I think if you do, if you don't, if you decide not to do it, you should become a monk and do it in your mind.
One should begin to worship the worship of the demigod Ganapati, who drives away all impediments in the execution of devotional service. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that Ganapati worships the lotus feet of Lord Srinivadeva, and in that way has become auspicious for the devotees, clearing out all impediments. Therefore, all devotees should worship Ganapati.
So here's a Bhakti Trumar like says, we don't worship Ganapati because we worship Lord Nisringadeva. And who does the Ganapati worship? We worship Lord Nisringadeva. So we can worship Lord Nisringadeva through our spiritual master. So it's not necessary. But you see in Chaupati, over the door of the temple is a emoji of Ganapati. And my room, if you look in my room, is also a picture of Ganapati. I keep it there. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to have a picture, but I don't think we do any formal worship. He's the son of Shiva, he's a special personality. But we pray to Lord Srinivadeva for removing impediments and devotional service.
I think also saying Bhakti Chara Maharaj said that one worships Ganapati to remove material obstacles, one worships Lord Nisringadeva to remove spiritual obstacles. It's like obstacles in that.
That's a very good point. That's the material obstacles.
Continue. The deity should not be bathed in water which has been touched by the nails or fingers.
One has to be careful when they prepare bath water. The pujaris should not touch you with their fingernails.
So
if you're also, if you're changing the water in the deity's cup, like you do with the Prabhupada, if your fingernail touches that water, you can't offer it. You should know that. And like you do it on the Vyasasa, nails should not touch the new water. If it does, you just pour it out and do it again. Nails, you cannot touch. Yeah, I'm very conscious of that.
When you're cooking, you're like washing the rice, washing now, the tender, the excess protection.
Then you're cooking, and then the fire purifies it.
Supercrit instructed me when we pass, sprinkle every cell with the water, that we should put it in the hand with the fingernails, and the fingers shouldn't touch it. Is that true?
Yeah. Generally, it's this idea of going around with.
But
this is a misconception. The pujari just stands there and he throws the water out. That's how you do it. You take it and you throw it to the group. But some people never liked that because some people didn't know how to throw it and they would just get hit smack in the face.
They
have glasses on. So, in order to avoid the wrong way to do it, they kind of created this other thing. But how do you do it? You throw it high.
Yeah.
You throw it up. And then you throw it up and then it comes down. And then you hit it when you catch it when it comes down and lands on it.
Yeah.
And then you have some places they have
the picture.
You put it in the thing and you go like this.
Yeah.
You've seen that?
Oh yeah,
With a flower.
That's another concoction.
Yeah.
So what should we do here? Should we go around individually or?
They do it.
When I get water, I do it. I throw on the roof.
Better just throw it. That's where we were trained. People who were throwing it weren't doing it right, so that just kind of.
The third part.
And then another way is that. If you throw it, sometimes it hits all over the floor. They say if you step on it, you're stepping in like the water. So they say, because they're too, in order to avoid that, we do it this way. So
there should be so many devotees in the temple, no water to take it
with them. That's the solution.
Yeah.
Yes, so they walk among the rats to the water.
You know, in all the temples, you just go and the pujari throws and everybody runs up to catch it and get hit with it. You get hit in the face with the water, it's great. Then you wake up. You feel insulted, but still you wake up. Why did that guy do that to me? And all of a sudden my japa becomes better. I tell you, it's the planting a culture from one culture to another culture. Sometimes it's a miracle making. I don't know how you did it. Bring Indian culture, Vedic culture into the West is very difficult. I mean, just like in India, if somebody walks and bangs into you, then you think nothing of it. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody crashes into you while you're walking. But here, you want to kill them. It's like, you know, you go to India, sometimes you just get pushed and shoved, and it's like normal, you know? I remember one devotee, she was on the parikram, and she was getting pushed and shoved, and she was just like, crying. She never decided to get off the parikram. Been knocked around, get pushed. It's just the way it is, you know, you just have to accept it. Go to Jagannath Puri. Anybody gone to Jagannath Puri for the rest of the action? I almost got killed last time.
You
could,
I saw Avikov's video, it's crazy. The police are up there, like, beating people up.
But I mean, even, you know, just in general, if somebody walks along the street and somebody bangs into it, nobody takes it serious. Try to avoid it, but nobody considers it an insult or an offense. It's just the way it is. There's just so many people there.
There's an amazing cultural difference of, like, India, they're just like, look at you, like, they don't have a problem in staring.
Yeah.
In America, if you glance at someone over like 3 seconds, they're like, what are you looking at? You know, you have some problem, and they maybe want to fight you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes in India, they stare at you for a long time. You know, in India, they say if you want to attract a crowd, you just go out in the middle of the road, just stand and look up. And as soon as you have a whole group of people,
no one knows who
wants to look at that. Correct?
Yeah.
Well, this is different. Anyway, cultures are different. It's like when you say, Prabhupada would say, if someone would say something negative, and Prabhupada would agree with it, he would say no. In other words, to confirm the negative by saying negative, he wouldn't say, yes, you're right. He would say no. And you would think he's denying what you say is true, but actually he's confirming it by saying no. I would also say the same thing. Just like you say, this is not the way to do it. Paul said, no. And he wouldn't say you're wrong. He'd say, yes, it's not the way to do it. So the cultures are different. Well, if you go like, if someone comes up to you and you want to acknowledge something, you go like this. And it looks like you're saying no, but you're actually saying
no. Yeah, they probably in the kitchen all the time.
It means yes.
That's amazing that you're making this point, because especially in regards to reading Prabhupada's letters, a lot of times devotees like to read Prabhupada's letters and make it seem like Prabhupada's making an absolute statement that's universally applied to every situation.
No, that's why
without understanding.
That's why they made those Shikshamrita volumes. they took the letters and applied it in a more categorized way. He said, well, take it away from that. The letters cannot be used as absolute scripture, because we're speaking time, place, and circumstance. In some cases, there's certain absolute principles, but in other cases, one has to know the difference. But for neophytes, they don't. Yeah, good point.
Continue.
Continue reading.
When a devotee is perspiring, he should not engage himself in worshipping the deity. Similarly, there are many other prohibitions. For example, one should not cross or step over the flowers offered to the deities, nor should one take a vow in the name of God. These are all different kinds of offenses in the matter of executing devotional service, and one should be careful to avoid them.
Okay.
Now,
should one cross or step over the flowers offered? One should take a vow. One can take a resolution, right? A resolution is just something, the light form of a vow. But a vow is very strong.
So when you take
initiation vows, one cannot break them.
Does in the name of Krishna?
It says you've taken initiation before the Guru, before the Vaishnavas, before the Lord, before the fire. So it's all considered to be a vow. And the idea of initiation vow means there's no turning back. Prabhupada said better to commit suicide than to break your vows, but he said, then he said, but don't do it. In other words, the vow is very strict. It's something that you make with due consideration and with due consultation. You just don't enter into something. Very seriously. About. In America, you know, people just don't take things seriously because they have an agenda. If you have an agenda, then you'll do anything to fulfill your agenda. You can say and do things that you don't mean. It's cheap. The idea of lying is like the worst form of sin. There's one statement in Bhagavatam. It says, Mother Earth can bear any sinful activity except a liar. So I cannot bear the weight of a liar on my body, Mother Earth. A liar is the lowest person. So if one's going to make a vow, they should keep it. Or at least they should do everything they can to keep it.
I was presented with an interesting, I guess, moral question in regards to mine. Because even in like Manu Shmiti, some scriptures say it says in certain circumstances you want to lie.
Yeah.
To
control the woman, it says if you want to control the woman, you can also speak lies to control the woman. Because an uncontrolled woman is worse than a lie.
That makes sense. but he gave me this scenario that he says Tisha gets to him, that some Jewish boy is running from the Nazis and he comes knocking on your door and he says, please help me, some Nazi people are after me and they want to kill me. So you have the choice to take them into your home, and then when the police come, you have to lie or to say the boy's lie. If he wants to be protected from the immoral act of lying, then you send the boy away, okay, no, I cannot, etc. So he runs, and then most likely they will catch him and kill him. So how do you act in such a situation? Which one is right? This was his question.
I think you have to know what's the principle. Mm-hmm. Protecting a life or lying is his worst. Sometimes a devotee will break a principle in order to fulfill a higher principle.
Yudhisthira Maharaj
told a lie. He wouldn't tell a lie, but Krishna chastised him for not telling a lie. What happened? His chariot, Yudhisthira Maharaj's chariot, would never touch the ground.
And when he spoke, when he refused to speak that lie, his chariot touched the ground. Krishna wanted to use a lie in order to kill, who was it?
But he said the elephant Aswatthama.
He told Yudhisthira to say that Aswatthama was killed, and he knew that anyone knew that Yudhisthira would never tell a lie. So Krishna told him, "You tell this lie, and that'll break the enthusiasm of Dronacharya, because he was a powerful fighter." So he wouldn't do it. So who? Somebody did it. Bhima. The Yudhisthira wouldn't tell him, wouldn't do it. Then someone said, well, then he said, Aswatthama the elephant?
Bhima killed
an elephant called Aswatthama. Yeah. And then he told him, you say Aswatthama, and then you speak elephant silently. It's softly so he can't hear it. That way you would be telling a lot. Look what happened when Krishna wanted to protect Arjuna. When, what was his name? Jayadrath. Jayadrath. Arjuna's son, Abhimanyu, was killed. This is a wonderful passage. And so when Abhimanyu was killed, a 16-year-old boy, he was killed unfairly by the cruel generals. The next day, when Arjuna heard, he said, I will kill Jayadrath, or I will enter into the fire and give up my life. And when the Kurus heard that vow, they said, wow, we have to protect Jayadrath by any means. And therefore, if Arjuna gives up his life, then we'll do that, because he's the one that's keeping us from winning this war. So powerful. So Krishna was driving Arjuna's chariot at the beginning of the fight, and he kept Dronacharya, who was Jayadrath, 28 miles away from. That's how big the battlefield of Kurukshetra was. It was like the other end of the field. It was 28 miles away. And therefore, Arjuna was fighting, he was killing more. Krishna says, don't waste time, come on, get the Jayadrath, you know. So he was calling, he was cutting through all these towns, and finally all these Kurus came in. Were fighting against it, and they protected Jayadrath in such a way that no one could get at him. And finally, what happened was, the battle ends at the end of, when the sun goes down. Everyone has to stop fighting, that's the rule. So the sun was going down, and Jayadrath was still alive on the other end of the field, and Krishna was saying, come on, we'll get to him. And Arjuna was fine. But finally, the sun went down, and Jayadrath was still alive. And then all the Kurus just let out a cheer. Arjuna will have to enter the fire now. And everyone stopped fighting. And then Krishna told Arjuna, kill him. And then he did. And he went right there. It was no protection because the fight was supposed to be over. And he killed him. Everybody was astonished. Arjuna breaks, you know, religious principles for a kshatriya. Oh, it was unbelievable. But then what Krishna did something mystical. He covered the sun with his potency, and it appeared the sun was going down. And when it was going down, but it was not down, and it looked like it was down. So then Krishna took his potency away, and everyone saw that the sun was still there in the sky. So Krishna did that to protect it. Kompya Patichani Dhyani Bhaktipara. And Krishna cheated. He cheated. So Arjuna would be saved. So you see, then there's a higher moral principle there, protection of the devotee. But generally, it means you don't lie for yourself. But if you lie to protect the Lord or for protecting the spiritual master, or protecting other devotees, then that's okay. But for oneself, one usually doesn't lie. Okay, so that finishes that. Let's see now. Where are we? Read the next paragraph, and then we can finish for the day. Any questions?
Padmapurana, it is stated that even a person whose life is completely sinful will be completely protected by the Lord if he simply surrenders unto him. So it is accepted that one who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes free from all sinful reactions. And even when a person becomes an offender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, he can still be delivered simply by taking shelter of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In other words, the chanting of Hare Krishna is beneficial for eradicating all sins. But if one becomes an offender to the holy names of the Lord, then he has no chance of being delivered.
Okay. So that leads up into the last section. All right, any final comments or questions?
During this section, that is, those who are living in the temple, they have more chance to commit offenses than those who don't live.
Yeah, and they also have more chance for advancement. That's true. That's why people move out, because they think it's easier. In one sense, it is, but in another sense, it's harder to make the spiritual advancement. Wherever there's great risk, there is also great gain. No pain, no gain. No risk, no brisk. You have to take a risk for Krishna. So it's true. Living in Vrindavan means greater opportunity for spiritual advancement, more opportunity for So therefore, the standard in the temple must be high. Temple standards are low, then everyone suffers.
If the temple is highest, then the congregation is going up.
Yeah.
So if the temple itself is low, then the congregation is even.
They should see the temple as something that they can get something from. Brings them up. And the quality of the temple is the quality of the Vaishnavas within the temple. That's the whole thing. Temple's like a hospital. If you're sick, you go into a hospital, you have to follow the rules and take diet, take medicine according to the doctor. You can't make it prescribe their own medicine or decide to take a watered down dose of the medicine. Those who live in a temple have to be serious. We're not interested in having big numbers in the temple, we're interested in having quality. It doesn't matter how many people live in a temple. But if the quality is there, then that is that's the foundation for success, because that will attract more people. Always keep quality. Sometimes we sacrifice quality in order to accommodate someone, but generally it's not the idea. You give someone a chance to come up to the standard, but after some time they should be evaluated. If they can't come up, then continue to chant, continue to worship, continue to come. You can visit the temple and take part, become Krishna conscious. Okay. Temple life is not enough for anyone. It's for serious people. That's why it's not an austerity to get up. You know, you take a bath and go to see the deities. And it's actually nectar. We consider it very difficult. I mean, if you're tired, you should organize your schedule where you get rest some other time. But you shouldn't cut the program out because you're tired. You know, I remember we used to go to bed late and get up anyway. It doesn't matter. Someone told me, I don't know, I never read this. Papa says, if you go to bed at 10, you get up at 4. If you go to bed at 12, you get up at 4. If you don't go to bed at 2, you get up at 4. Yeah. In other words, there's no reason why you can't be there. People, I'm preaching late. Yeah, last night I came back preaching late. I got to bed 11:15. I set my alarm for I wanted to get up for Mangalarti, and I woke up 4:15, and then the next thing I know it was 4:15, because I was wiped out. But still, I'm thinking I should get up. I want to go home. I feel bad when I get to the morning. Mangalarti is so nice. So nice. Krishna's just, you know, he's out all night. And he's playing, he's having a sports book at this transcendental vocation. He comes back and looks really sweet. He only slept, Krishna's only slept 1 hour. He goes to bed, what time? He goes to bed on Sunday. And then he gives it, after an hour he wakes up.
You and Krishna went down, going to
read the Astakala Lila? Yeah. He's supposed to be sleeping, but he sneaks out. He meets Radharani. Yeah. And then they have their pastimes, and he comes back. He's there. And then Mother Yasoda wakes him up, and he's still tired, but he gets up anyway. She's thinking he slept all night. So crazy. And then later on during the day, I think he takes a little rest with the cowboys. But he reads the Astakala Lila, of course, it's really high stuff. You know what Krishna is doing. Watch if you put the books there. Yeah. And you know what Krishna is doing for the whole day, you know. You know what Krishna is doing for the whole day. And it's nectar. So, you know, why can't we get up from one of us? At least we should try. You know? Oh, it's nice in there. Nitya Vita read that thing on the wall and said, wow, yeah, that's the standard. I like that sign I put up on the wall. He was finally up there. But this is the ultimate. Serious devotees know what it is standing. And guess what? Maya will hit you wherever you're weak. If you have some reason in your mind why you shouldn't go, Maya will give you, will build that reason and make it sound even more reasonable. Maya works in such a way as wherever you're weak, she hits you there. And she enhances your weakness by reinforcing it in different ways. And then you realize that there actually is all Maya. And then when you cover that area, you work on that. And then she'll look for another area. She's doing that just to strengthen you in all areas. And then when you see you're serious in all areas, she pays her obeisances to you. You're past my test. You are now Krishna's devotee. That's her job, to make you somehow or other become strong by attacking you when you're weak. Because a fighter will always defend their weak spot. You know, this is my weak spot, I have to put extra care in that area. Wherever I'm weak. So our weakness may be morning program, our weakness may be association with devotees, our weakness may be lack of desire to read and study scripture. Wherever we're weak, you know, Maya will give us reasons why we should, you know, be even weaker. Okay, now I'm supposed to leave on next Wednesday, so I'm scheduled. I think it's on Tuesday. Do you want to have more classes before I leave, or do you want to just have one more class and then that's it? We can up the class schedule if you want. We can have one on Monday, which is the goddess. Saturday is can't do a Saturday. We can do tomorrow if you want. Friday and Monday are open. Friday, Monday, and Tuesday, just if you want to have an extra class. Or we can just keep the schedule. That's up to you. I mean, you know, whatever you think is best. We'll just keep the schedule and one more class.
Oh, and I can really finish. I mean, I don't see the need to do another class.
Yeah, maybe that's... Actually, the next... Maybe we should just finish this chapter, the 10 offenses. Because the 10 offenses are important. Let's see, what's the questions for this chapter?
Chapter 9 you're talking about?
No, number 8, we didn't do the questions.
You didn't give us questions, you said on...
I passed the idea.
To have us write down questions?
Yeah.
Oh, so.
Did we answer all the questions? Does anybody have any questions that were unanswered?
You answered my questions.
Okay. Question. Okay, here's the questions from chapter 8, and these are for next time. There's 7 questions. Of course, the first question is, what are the 32 offenses in the matter of serving the Lord? Don't worry about that. I'm not going to list those. List the 29 offenses mentioned in the Baraha Purana Sarani there. What are the other rules mentioned in this chapter? That's mentioned. Okay, here's a question. What does the Padma Purana say about sinful people? That's question 1. What does the Padma Purana say about sinful people? Sinful persons.
Okay.
Number 2. Two is, how can an offender of Krishna be delivered? And number 3, last one, how can an offender of Krishna be delivered? Number 3 is, what is the seriousness of offenses against the Holy Name? And read the 10 offenses, and next class will be discussed. We'll discuss those because I think they're so important. I don't think we really understand the deeper implications and meanings of the 10 offenses just by reciting them. So we'll make that the next class. So you want to have one more class, and that's it? We'll keep the schedule?
When you come back from your trip, we'll be able to continue.
I don't know. I don't have much time left before I go to Europe and India. I leave on June 16th. There'll be at least another two or three classes. But we'll take it as far as I can, and then the rest you can do on your own. You can just read and study the rest on your own. I think we've covered some of the most important points. But this whole first section is the foundation for the study of this scripture, the first 19 chapters.
Could we do a whole section on the Bhaktira Thomas? Then maybe I call one.
Go in?
Yeah,
alright. An individual study thing? Of course, they also have this book here.
Yes.
It's Ways of Devotion. It speaks about, it's more like a synopsis of how to study this. Okay, so I have one person, I have one problem personally. On Tuesday, I'm supposed to clear out my whole room and at the same time leave on Wednesday. I was thinking of switching the class to Monday. Can we do that? Monday's a Kalasi. From 4 to 6 on Monday instead of on Tuesday. Only because it's going to be a little hard for me to do everything. I mean, I can do it, but it might be real difficult. Because I have to empty my whole room on Tuesday. And also, Jerry's going to help. Some people are going to help too on Tuesday. So, and Tuesday is the day after the concert. So, does anybody object to scheduling?